Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Aaron Lisberg, MD, an assistant professor of medicine and a hematologist and medical oncologist at UCLA Health, to discuss the data that has been generated with datopotamab deruxtecan in non-small cell lung cancer. Datopotamab deruxtecan is a differentiated TROP2-directed antibody-drug conjugate under study in the Phase 1 TROPION PanTumor01 trial in patients with advanced solid tumors. The agent demonstrated encouraging anti-tumor activity and a manageable safety profile in patients with advanced or metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, according to updated results of the trial that were presented during the 2021 ASCO annual meeting. In our exclusive interview, Lisberg discussed the excitement with datopotamab deruxtecan in non-small cell lung cancer, presented the findings from the dose analysis of the TROPION PanTumor01 trial, and previewed anticipated data from the non-small cell lung cancer cohort during the International Association for the Study of Lung Cancer 2021 World Conference on Lung Cancer.
So thank you everybody for joining us today. We're going to be giving a high-level overview of the development thus far of DS-1062, our Dato-DXd, in non-small cell lung cancer. To facilitate that, we'll be summarizing the most recent data that was presented at ASCO 2021, the understanding that there is updated data that will be coming out of World Lung of this year. TROP2 is a transmembrane glycoprotein that is an intercellular calcium signaling transducer. It's overexpressed and associated with poor prognosis in non-small cell lung cancer as well as other epithelial cancers. The drug is being evaluated in a number of different diseases, but we're going to focus our attention on non-small cell lung cancer today. DS-1062 is an antibody drug conjugate. It's composed of a humanized anti-TROP2 IgG1 monoclonal antibody that's conjugated to a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor via a stable tetrapeptide-based cleavable linker. Previous results from this trial that we have presented over the past couple of years have shown highly encouraging anti-tumor activity with a manageable safety profile. Again, we're going to be summarizing non-small cell lung cancer today, but there is enrollment for other tumor types, and there has been data that has been presented there too. On the phase 1 trial, which we'll be discussing today, that MTD was established at 8 milligrams per kilogram, and then there was additional patients enrolled at 4, 6, and 8 milligrams. The dose that's been chosen to move forward on future trials, which we'll talk about at the end of this presentation, is 6 milligrams per kilogram. But the data we'll go over today is from all the 4, 6, and 8 milligram per kilogram doses. And the data that was presented in the ASCO abstract that I'll be talking about today was a data cutoff of January 8th. And so we talked about the ADC. When you're thinking about an antibody drug conjugate, there's really three components that are important to focus on. The antibody itself, again, in this case, it's a humanized anti-TROP2 monoclonal antibody. The linker, which is a cleavable tetrapeptide-based linker here, and the payload, which we talked about was a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload, DXd. Again, there's a high potency of the payload. The drug-to-antibody ratio here is around 4. The payload has a short systemic half-life. But it's important to know that this drug that becomes active within the tumor cell also can have a bystander anti-tumor effect where the drug can diffuse across the membrane and kill neighboring cancer cells. So the phase 1 trial, which now is titled TROPION PanTumor01, was a multi-center dose escalation, dose expansion study in patients with advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer and other tumor types. So patients that were enrolled, there was no number of prior lines of therapy that was restricted to. It was basically that patients had to be relapsed or refractory to known standard of care in the advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer setting. Importantly, there was no selection for TROP2 expression, so patients were enrolled regardless of TROP2 expression. Importantly, in non-small cell lung cancer, TROP2 is expressed in the majority of patient samples, but there was no minimum TROP2 expression that was required for enrollment on a trial. Patients that have measurable disease, and the trial was very inclusive in terms of brain metastases, allowing inactive brain mets, which were defined as those that had been treated or were not requiring therapy with steroids or anti-seizure medications to be enrolled on trial. So a lot of the patients enrolled on trial did have stable brain metastases. So the dose escalation proceeded. It went up to 10 milligrams per kilogram, where we did see a lot of toxicity. So MTD was established at 8 milligrams per kilogram. And then, as I said, additional patients were enrolled at 4, 6, and 8 milligrams per kilogram to evaluate further. So in terms of the baseline characteristics and the outcomes, The follow-up period was shorter for patients at 4 and 6 milligrams per kilogram because they were enrolled on those expansion cohorts were enrolled at a later time. But a number of patients were enrolled across those three dose levels, and the median follow-up for the 8 milligrams per kilogram was about 14 months. For the 6 milligram per kilogram group, it was 6.6 months, and the 4 milligram per kilogram, it was 9.2 months. So we had some good follow-up across the study. In terms of patients that were ongoing study treatment at the time of data cutoff, 30% of the patients at 4 milligrams per kilogram were still on study treatment, 26 at 6 milligrams per kilogram, and 13% at 8 milligrams per kilogram. So in terms of baseline characteristics across the different doses, the majority of patients were actually younger. So only 36% at 4 milligrams per kilogram, 40% at 6, and 46% at 8 were greater than 65. So it's actually a younger patient population than we see on some of the other trials. Majority of patients were male, but it was pretty well balanced, around 50% male, 50% female. Patients were enrolled both in the United States and Japan. Majority of patients on this trial were non-squamous. Squamous histology, it varied based on the different dose levels, but it was between 10 and 18%. And really importantly, more than half of patients at all the dose levels had at least three prior lines of therapy. And many of those patients had a lot more than three prior lines of therapy. So these were really heavily pretreated patients. To underscore that point, between 94 and 98% of patients had had prior platinum-based chemotherapy. In terms of immunotherapy, similar numbers, 74 to 88% had had immunotherapy. And there were a significant number of patients with EGFR mutation, between 16 and 20%, depending on the dose level. You know, a wide variety of patient types and heavily pretreated throughout. So in terms of safety, overall, this drug has shown a manageable safety profile. And, you know, the majority of patients did not have a grade 3 or higher event at the lower doses. But as you move up to the 8 milligrams per kilogram, for in terms of treatment emergent adverse events, you know, 58% of patients did have that at 8 milligrams per kilogram. If you really focus on those events that were grade 3 or higher that were thought to be drug-related, you still see a 35% rate at the 8 milligrams per kilogram, which is really suggesting lack, you know, less tolerability, which is why the 6 milligram per kilogram dose has been chosen for the future trials. At that dose level, only 16% of patients had a grade 3 or higher drug-related TEAE, and dose adjustments were required. You know, one area that is very concerning with a lot of these antibody drug conjugates, and especially in patients with lung cancer, is interstitial lung disease. Again, if you look across the doses at the 8 milligrams per kilogram, again, the dose that's not being used in future trials, but with the MTD on this trial, about 15% of patients had interstitial lung disease, which is a fairly significant number. Whereas if you compare that to the 6 milligrams per kilogram dose, which is the dose that's being used on future trials, that was only 4%. And importantly, those 4% of patients, which was two patients, the ILD in those two patients at 6 milligrams per kilogram was grade 2 or less, whereas in the 8 milligrams per kilogram, we see actually three patients with grade 5 ILD, which are obviously fatal and very concerning. But again, the drug-related fatal ILD only occurred in patients at the 8 milligrams per kilogram dose compared to 6 and 4. There were no fatal events at 6 or 4. Again, in terms of the TEAEs that occurred in at least 15% of patients, the most common were nausea, stomatitis, alopecia, fatigue, vomiting, decreased appetite. A lot of patients did have infusion-related reactions on the trial, but once they were identified, the rate of drug infusion reduced and patients were premedicated. And in the vast majority of cases, when those steps were taken, the infusion-related reaction did not recur. Importantly, on the phase two is for all actionable mutations. Obviously, the majority of patients there are going to be EGFR mutants. The phase three is in comparison, a comparison randomization of this drug versus docetaxel. Patients are allowed to get premedications at the first cycle, so likely the infusion-related reaction rate will be lower. There wasn't a lot of bone marrow toxicity with this drug. Some anemia was seen, but we really didn't see a lot of neutropenia or thrombocytopenia. Eye toxicity, as has been seen with other ADCs, was also seen on this trial. But, you know, in from a general perspective, the toxicities that were seen could be managed with dose reductions or symptomatic medications or dose interruptions. And many of these patients were on the drug for an extended period of time and remain on the drug for an extended period of time. So let's put some numbers behind the efficacy. So if you look at the efficacy of this drug, again, depending on the different dose levels, so at 4 milligrams per kilogram, the objective response rate was 24%. That was also seen at 8 milligrams per kilogram. At 6 milligrams per kilogram, it's slightly higher at 26%. And the duration of response is really pretty remarkable here. It was not evaluable in 4 mg/kg. It was 10.5 months in 6 mg/kg and 9 months in the 8 mg/kg group. That also led to really long PFSs. So at the dose that's being used on future patients, which is obviously very impressive for these patients who have essentially become resistant to all other standard approaches. When you look at the waterfall plot from the trial, again, all this data is coming from the poster that was presented at ASCO. So certainly feel free to bring that up as you're listening to the podcast. But obviously, I'm giving you all the high points. There were some deep and very deep tumor responses. And if you look at that compared to the dose levels, you can see that really at 4, 6, and 8 mg, we see some pretty remarkable reductions in tumor volume. So it doesn't appear to be unique to the higher dose levels, suggesting that 6 mg/kg is a good dose level to move forward on the trial. And there's a spider plot in figure 5 that's presented. Here you can see that those patients that had really deep tumor reductions also had durable responses, which again speaks to the long median duration of response and the median PFS. So it's very, very impressive what is seen on the spider plot. There was a pharmacometric analysis assessing the amount of exposure to drug and the probability of response. And unsurprisingly, as the patients had more exposure to the drug, you do see a higher likelihood of response. But again, there's overlapping between the 8 and 6 mg because there was so much more toxicity seen at 8 mg/kg, 6 mg/kg, which also has shown really excellent efficacy, but is much more tolerable, is the dose that's being moved forward. And then one of the most significant toxicity that we see frequently in the patients on this trial is stomatitis mucosal inflammation. And again, that appears to be dose dependent as well. The more drug at a higher dose the patient receives, the more likely they are to develop this toxicity. This toxicity is obviously can be very debilitating to patients to have significant mucositis, but there are a number of mouthwashes and good oral care that can be very effective in many patients. Dose reductions or dose delays has also been effective. And again, there's some overlapping between 8 and 6 mg, and clearly the lower doses were less toxic. And given the efficacy of those doses, it makes sense to move forward with 6 mg/kg. And basically, there was some, you know, virtual population probabilities and again, some additional data to support the idea that because of the decreased toxicity at 6 mg/kg, which with pretty much maintain efficacy, that that's the appropriate dose to move forward on. So in terms of the ASCO presentation, the poster presentation that was recently shown, this drug, Dato-DXd or DS-1062, shows highly encouraging anti-tumor activity with a manageable safety profile in patients with advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. Tumor responses were durable across doses with a trend toward longer PFS, 6 mg/kg. And the analysis really did show that 6 mg/kg is the right dose to be assessing going forward. So as I said, there is a phase 2 trial evaluating this drug, a single arm trial in patients with actionable mutations. Again, the most common actionable mutation being EGFR mutants, many of which were enrolled on the phase 1 trial and many of which had benefit. So that's ongoing right now. And there's also a phase 3 trial for patients without actionable mutations that have non-small cell lung cancer, where this drug is randomized against docetaxel and evaluated for benefit. So that is the overall schema of this trial. And I think this is a drug that we really should be paying attention to in non-small cell lung cancer, both in the actionable mutation patient population, as well as the non-actionable mutation patient population. You know, I think appropriately, the trial was designed agnostic of TROP2 expression. So the pretest hypothesis would be obviously that the target of the antibody drug conjugate TROP2 expression on the tumor cell would likely be predictive of response. Although it was not shown on this ASCO presentation, in the ASCO presentation the year prior and some of our other presentations, we've shown that the H-score for TROP2, which is the level of expression times the number of cells expressing TROP2, has not directly correlated with response, which is interesting and really suggests that there are other mechanisms underlying why patients are responding or not responding. I don't think we have that fully understood yet. But importantly, as these trials continue to move forward, the phase 2 and phase 3 do not require a certain level of TROP2 expression for enrollment, which is similar to what's been seen with some of the other Daiichi ADCs, including the HER3 ADC and then the HER2, where we see, you know, mutation is more predictive of response rather than expression. So there's more science that needs to be done here for sure to help us, you know, enrich populations. But in the unselected TROP2 population, without any specific biomarker, we're seeing really remarkable benefit, which has the potential to become, you know, an available option for us at some point in the future, potentially, if these encouraging preliminary results seen on the phase one trial continue to be seen on the phase two and phase three. So as I mentioned at the beginning of talk, there is going to be additional data from the non-small cell lung cancer patients treated on the phase one trials to be presented at World Lung. And I think that that will be very interesting. We'll have a longer duration follow-up in our patients and be able to really assess kind of more holistically what the benefit was. So please come back. We will have another discussion after World Lung about that data. And then potentially about the phase two and phase three trials. Those will also be presented, but more in a trial in progress setting, because those trials are earlier on. It'll be very interesting to see how the data plays out on those trials as well.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at Enclave SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave on Air.